Okay, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the NIS TEEN, but I know you're all familiar with the National Immunization Survey, and the NIS TEEN is the teen component of that survey, which this uses the analysis from the last quarter of 2006, and in June we'll have another full year of data for 2007, so we'll be able to enhance this analysis because we'll have that many more observations. So I'm talking about vaccination coverage among U.S. teens and the impact of health insurance. Okay, I'll talk a little bit about the objective of the analysis, the data that we're using, the statistical methods employed, results and conclusions. Our objective is to examine the determinants of insurance status among U.S. teens, as well as examine the relationship between insurance status and the child's vaccination coverage. The data we use, the National Immunization Survey TEEN, or NIS TEEN, we're using the fourth quarter of 2006, which is when it was first fielded. This is a complex sample survey that's conducted actually by NORC, the National Opinion Research Center, that's an arm of University of Chicago, on behalf of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's a representative sample of U.S. children age 13 to 18 years, so we've got 13 through 17-year-olds. And it includes information on their insurance status, their vaccination coverage, as well as demographics. The sampling frame is based on a random digit dialing survey, and it includes follow-up with their provider to do the record check to see what immunizations they actually have. This quarter includes 4,356 teenagers, which is a lot of teenagers to have in one place. The statistical methods I use to explain insurance status and vaccination coverage, which I'm calling UTD, I use two independent probits, and the probit is kind of like a logit, except we assume a normal distribution rather than a log normal distribution, as well as a recursive bivariate probit with instrumental variables. Now, this sounds like a nasty disease, and that's just a statistician's way of telling you that you don't really want to know what goes into it. It's kind of like sausage. No, but I'm going to kind of walk you through it. It's a little more esoteric than what we usually do, but it's fun too. So, and it allows us to actually look at causality as well as correlation, okay? This is some nasty Greek stuff that's basically telling you that our two independent probits assume that immunization coverage is a function of a lot of stuff as well as insurance status, and insurance status is going to depend on some other things, okay? And these two independent probits, the important part of this is that we're assuming that the errors of the regressions of immunization status and insurance status are not correlated, okay? What allows us to look at causality is when we test to see whether or not those errors are correlated. Okay, here's our bivariate probit with instrumental variables. In this case, Y, which is immunization status, is going to be a function of a lot of stuff, which is our X's, right? Our Z is insurance status. Z is going to be a function of some other X's, as well as what we're going to call instrumental variables. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about those in a minute. But here, we're assuming that the errors, the little epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, are correlated, and that's what allows us, once we see whether or not they're correlated, to look at causality. So our dependent variables, insurance status is a 0-1 variable, with 1 being insured, 0 being uninsured. Up-to-dateness is if the teen was up-to-date for tetanus diphtheria booster as of the date of the interview, and 0 if they were not up-to-date. So I'm just looking at tetanus diphtheria. And the reason for that is because some of the other immunizations that the teen is eligible for, when this was done in 2006, the uptake of meningococcal vaccine and of the human papillomas virus vaccine, the uptake was low enough that there wasn't a whole lot going on there. For the teen, we've got information on their age, sex, race, ethnicity, origin, the country of origin, or the country in which they were born, basically whether or not they were born in the United States, the metropolitan statistical area, their health status on a scale, whether or not they've moved since their birth, the time that they had their last physician checkup, whether they had a checkup at the time that they were 11 to 12 years old, and whether or not their parent had a shot record for them at the time of the interview. We also have information on the teen's mother and their household, the teen's mother's age, education, marital status, and income, the language in which the interview was conducted, the number of children in the household, and the number of people in the household. With respect to the providers, because we do that follow-up provider record check, we know the number of providers that the teen had that could provide immunization information, as well as whether the provider participated in the vaccination program, the state vaccination program, or whether or not they ordered vaccine from the health department. Now, for instruments, these instruments are basically this and the correlation of our errors are what is going to allow me to look at causality between insurance and up-to-dateness, okay? And for the instruments, I needed to find something that was correlated with insurance, but not with up-to-dateness, okay? So the language in which the interview was conducted, whether it was English, Spanish, or another language, and whether or not the child was foreign-born, I found to be correlated and significantly correlated with insurance status, but these were not correlated with their up-to-dateness. So these will serve as good instruments that will let me look at causality between insurance and up-to-dateness. Some summary statistics, and the mean here represents, in the case of 0-1 variables, the proportion. So 41% of our teens were up to date for their tetanus, diphtheria, booster, and these teens are, of course, between ages 13 and 18, right? I found that a little discouraging, because this isn't exactly a new vaccine, is it? 41%. 91% of our teens were insured, which is actually pretty good. And this includes public insurance as well as private insurance. The age we scaled between 1 and 5. 51% of our teens were male, 17% were Hispanic, 14% were black, and 6 were of another race. Only 5% of our teens were foreign-born, 68% had had a checkup between the ages of 11 and 12, and yet only 41% were up-to-date for tetanus diphtheria. 25% of them had their shot record on hand at the time of the interview. That scale, the health of the teen was a scale variable between 1 and 4. With 1 indicating in good health and 4 indicating poor health. 19% of our teens had asthma. This time since last checkup basically measures the number of years since they had their last checkup. So the average teen, it had been 1.6 years since they had their last checkup. That's not unusual because we all know that teens don't make it into the doctor too often unless it's for an athletic physical or something. 22% of our teens had moved since the time that they were born. 38% lived inside a city, 45% were in a suburban residence, and 17% were rural. Average number of children in the household, 2.19. Number of people in the household overall, which included adults and infants as well, 4.44. 30% had incomes above $75,000. 48% between the federal poverty level and $75,000, and 18% had incomes below the federal poverty level. Average number of providers that were needed to report on immunization status, 1.42. 38% of teens had all of their providers participating in the state vaccination program. 5% had some of their providers participating. 89% of our teens were interviewed in English, 10% in Spanish, and 2 in another language. And the age of the mother was whether or not the mother was over 35. So a young mother was considered a mother under the age of 35. An older mother was a mother over the age of 45, I believe. 1% had a mother that was deceased, 20% had mothers that were widowed, separated, or divorced, and 8% had single moms. And then 16% of the mothers had at least a baccalaureate degree, 9% had an advanced degree. These are the results from the independent probit for insurance status, basically looking at what influences whether or not the teen has insurance. The stuff that is highlighted in yellow indicates variables that were significant at least 0.1. And you can see that the age of the teen was important, the time since they'd had their last checkup was important, determinant of whether or not they had insurance. Income greater than $75,000, obviously that's going to encourage them to have insurance, because folks that make better than $75,000 are more likely to have employer-sponsored insurance. The greater the number of providers, more likely the child had insurance. Being foreign-born was negatively associated with having insurance. Having a mother that had a higher education, positively associated with having insurance. If the interview was conducted in Spanish, this was decreased the probability of the child being insured. A language other than English or Spanish increased the probability of insurance, and suburban residence was positively associated with insurance. When we look at the univariate and bivariate probit, again, you can see the stuff that's highlighted in yellow is stuff that was significantly related to their insurance, as significantly related to up-to-dateness, immunization up-to-dateness. So the age of the teen, again, whether or not they had a checkup between 11 and 12 years of age. The health of the teen for the univariate probit was negative and significant, but we lost significance with the bivariate probit. Time since last checkup, actually negatively associated with immunization status. But the stuff that had the most impact, we can see whether or not the child was insured. It had a marginal effect of 0.34, okay? So whether or not the child is insured is going to increase the probability of being up to date by 34%. Whether the child was foreign-born and the interview was conducted in Spanish served as significant instruments here, okay? Both negatively associated with immunization status. Provider participation in the vaccination program, marginal effect of 0.33 and 0.4. So we see provider participation is also an important determinant of the child's immunization status. So the big things we've got here, big influences on immunization status, are provider participation, provider participation in the vaccination program, whether or not the child had a checkup when they were 11 to 12 years old, and their insurance status. Those are the big ones. Vaccination up-to-dateness and insurance status are jointly determined for U.S. teens, okay? We saw that the errors were indeed correlated between insurance status and immunization status. So there is a causal effect between these two guys, and they are jointly determined or simultaneously determined. While insurance status predicts up-to-dateness and has an important influence on up-to-dateness, being foreign-born and Spanish-speaking are strong predictors of insurance status. We've seen this, and I am actually planning to do some further analysis on the impact of being foreign-born and Spanish-speaking, because these are important determinants of insurance status, which means that they're also important determinants of whether the child is getting the well child visits. Any questions?
We can take questions for all the speakers now. And actually, I had a question for Noelle. Did you look at underinsurance? Because I noticed that only about 9% of the teenagers were uninsured. But we've been hearing a lot in other areas of ISD about underinsurance. And I heard a quote in a long meeting the other day saying that about 20% of teenagers are underinsured for vaccination. So did you check whether the insurance covers vaccinations?
Actually, Phil and I, who was my co-author on this one, are also doing an analysis of underinsurance. Right now we're looking at underinsurance and young children, and we also plan to do an analysis of underinsurance in teens. And that's a big thing, because VFC covers the vaccine, but doctors don't deliver vaccines in the absence of well child visits and administration fees. So the bulk of the cost of getting vaccinated is in fact the well child visit and the vaccination fees rather than the vaccine itself. So if the child doesn't have good coverage, chances are they're not going to get vaccinated, despite the fact that they're eligible for VFC.
Okay, I've got one specific question for Noel, and it's the economist question, so the rest of you can tune out for about 30 seconds. On your results table in the bivariate probit, column says coefficient estimates or coefficients, but you said marginal effect.
Are in fact marginal effects. Okay. I know they're mislabeled.
I figured they probably work since that's what you said. Okay, good. That takes care of that one specific question. My general question for all of you is nothing specific about your particular studies, but more about the way that you do your work at CDC. You've all been there for several years now, some for coming up on 7 years, and some for 3 or 4 years post-fellowship, I guess. My question is, how do you take the training and the expertise that you have and try to help answer the questions that are brought to you these days, because we're really moved beyond cost effectiveness, cost benefit, and cost utility analysis in that simple framework that's usually perceived it gets done at CDC. So how have you been able to move beyond that? Have you had communication problems? You had to sell this idea to people? Just any discussion you might have on that.
Baby steps, Mark. I started with what I showed you today, and we're moving this year beyond that first step, you know, getting into decomposition and some of the structural equation stuff. So I think you have to do it slowly, because it's very, you know, it's very difficult to explain some of the complicated stuff to the world of public health. But if you give it to them in small doses and one step at a time, they're receptive. But yeah, you have to do it slowly. That's the thing.
Yeah, I'll address that since I have a history of not doing any cost-effectiveness analysis. After 7 years, by the way, three of us started September 10th, 2001. Noel, Maya, and I all started on the same day. And what really struck me today is all three of us, including Enbo, have moved significantly beyond cost-effectiveness analysis. And I think that we think that it's difficult to do, but I think that because we've all moved above and beyond, it's becoming a lot more common. And I think CDC is beginning, in some areas, to recognize the importance of other types of economic analysis. And I've found today extremely encouraging, if nothing else, for that fact alone. Noel?
I found that the way to get beyond cost effectiveness analysis is tell people that you're a mathematical statistician. No, but seriously, I recently took a position with the assessment branch as a mathematical statistician, and I get to do all sorts of fun stuff that I was actually trained to do in grad school that didn't include cost effectiveness analysis. I don't think any of us actually were trained to do cost effectiveness analysis in grad school. So there's all sorts of things that we can do besides that.
Actually, are any? I've never yet met an economist who was trained in cost-effectiveness analysis. Has anybody else met anybody? No. Okay. Well.
Okay. I think the most important thing is understanding each other, because you know my background is agriculture economics, studying food safety. When I take a candidacy exam, there I invited a couple of food scientists and food safety experts from Ohio State Department. They refused to understand the economic model applied to the food safety problem. And my faculty members from economics department, agricultural economics department, didn't understand why we have to consider the data from food safety. The same thing happened here when I came here. Because you know, some consider economics is kind of complementary. You know, it is important, but it is not what CDC or the other folks think important. Because people are dying, people are getting diseases. So what can you do? You always demanded the data after something happened, but the understanding the value of economic analysis and the value of epidemiologic study and other statistics studies, then we now know that we can do better to provide informed decisions or to provide the valuable data to consider consideration into the decision making analysis. process.
All right, are there any other questions?
If I can make two more comments. One is, those of you who are interested in influenza planning and that sort of thing, keep an eye out, because one of the things that Bo is working on is a tool to help you decide how big your clinic needs to be in terms of the number of resources. And do you expand the one that you've started, or do you replicate it somewhere else? Or you get to a stage where you need to move to the next community center or gym? And that, you know, it's a study's been done, and we're going to try and turn it into a tool very soon. The last thing is to remember the most important thing about economics is not about money. It's about choices. It's about the consequences and the incentives that are lead to and are a result of those choices. And so that's the main reason you didn't see a tally of costs or benefits or outcomes today in the way that you might have expected to see them in an economics session in public health. So if you've got any questions about the things that you saw today or how we can help you answer some questions, contact any of these folks. You can contact me, and we'll see what we can do to help you out.
Yes, economics is a behavioral science. Okay, some housekeeping announcements. Please stop by the, continuing education room for credits or to request a certificate of attendance. Conference staff is available until 1 p.m. today to help you with your continuing education evaluations. You can also apply for continuing educational credit over the internet after the conference. The next session will begin promptly at 10:30 following a short break. Please see pages 30 and 31 of your agenda book for detailed information about offerings during this session. Very important, the Peachtree Center MARTA station, the closest station to the hotel, is closed today. Stop by the information desk and ask the hotel concierge for information and suggestions for alternative ways to reach the airport or other MARTA stations. Please do not forget to complete and submit your conference evaluation form. You'll find it behind the last tab of your agenda. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the conference. And I'd like to thank all our speakers. I think it was an excellent session.